Cuba and the surprise move this week by US President Barack Obama and his Cuban counterpart Raúl Castro to begin normalizing relations between the two countries. It'll be some time yet before real change occurs. The total lifting of the US trade sanctions on Cuba, for instance, will have to be ratified by the US Congress, and the Republican Party-dominated House will demand much more from Cuba before they make that move. But how did this deal come about? That's a question I put to Tim Padgett, who's America's editor with Miami Radio and TV Network WLRN and the Miami Herald News.
The linchpin, I think, to this deal was identifying a spy, a genuine spy or intelligence agent that Cuba could hand over in exchange for the three remaining spies that the Cuban spies that the U.S. had in prison here. Administration officials have now, identified that person as Rolando Saraf, a Cuban intelligence agent who was very helpful to the United States in getting a lot of Cuban spies in the United States prosecuted and convicted. Once that spy was identified, then an actual Cold War style spy swap could occur. And once that had happened, then Raúl Castro was willing to let Alan Gross be released as a humanitarian gesture. And during that whole process, what's even more important then is during that secret negotiation process, that's when the path toward normalizing relations between the United States and Cuba really began.
How solid a deal is this, though? Is there a document? Was there a handshake, a solemn declaration? Or what standing does this deal have, if any?
Well, I think the standing that it has is the fact that Obama and Cuban leader Raúl Castro actually had a direct presidential phone call on Tuesday, which was the first one between two Cuban and U.S. heads of state in since the 1959 revolution. So I think, you know, the fact that these two heads of state were willing to talk to each other, or at least the U.S. president was willing to talk to a Cuban head of state directly on the phone, that was quite a leap. And I think that's essentially the standing that this deal has.
What then is the guts of the deal, and what's the sequencing? Will the changes come about on an incremental basis?
Oh, yes, as does everything when it comes to U.S.-Cuba relations. Obviously, the most significant part of the deal and the most stunning was the U.S.'s decision to normalize relations with Cuba, which were severed back in 1961. The other chief components of this deal is that Obama will make it easier for Americans to travel to Cuba. They still can't go as tourists. The travel ban that was put in place in 1962, along with the trade embargo against Cuba, can only be overturned by Congress. But Obama's executive powers do let him make it easier for Americans to travel to Cuba under certain categorical purposes, business, people-to-people exchanges, academic exchanges, etc. And as I said, that will be much easier now, as will doing business with Cubans, particularly these fledgling Cuban entrepreneurs whose numbers have been growing there. It will be easier to export, for example, the capital goods that they need, be it, you know, telecom, building materials, things of that nature, and perhaps even things like microlending now that Obama has said that it will be permissible for U.S. banks to start setting up partnerships with Cuban banks, such as they are.
You mentioned the lifting of the trade embargo. What's the plan in relation to that? What needs to happen first before that happens, given the difficulties that Obama has in Congress?
I think what has to happen is that Raúl Castro has to give a little more. You're not going to see the Cuban embargo overturned here in the United States until after the next presidential election. The interim period then is when we'll see whether or not Raúl Castro makes some gestures that will make it easier for Congress to get rid of the embargo. We don't expect to see a lot of political changes from him in terms of human rights, democratization, etc. But this move by Obama does raise change expectations so high in Cuba that it will be hard for Raúl Castro now not to give a little more on the economic side. You may see him, for example, make changes like letting foreign companies hire workers in Cuba without having to go through the state. Right now, for example, if you want to hire a Cuban worker, you have to go through the state government to do that. Or, for example, letting these new private enterprises in Cuba become bigger a little and more lucrative, and allowing them to export and import products and services and receive foreign investment. Those sort of broader openings are a more realistic possibility, I think, from Raul than political openings. And if they happen, that will make it easier for the U.S. Congress to ditch the embargo and the travel ban. You know, it could take a year or two, but it's looking more and more like the embargo will not be surviving in the long run.
This deal has its doubters. In the United States, there are skeptics, quite a few of them, and they would say, well, look, Raul Castro made these promises before. There were to be economic reforms before, but they moved very slowly, and then why would he be trusted this time?
I don't think he can be, but that's to those who support this new engagement tack that the United States is now taking. They would say that's not the point. The focus now has to be on what puts the U.S. in the best position to help democratize Cuba when the Castro brothers are dead, to put it bluntly. Engagement is the best long-term bet.
And that was Tim Padgett, America's editor with WLRN and the Miami Herald News.